My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a member of something, Carl Gables Group or something like that. Some group, somewhere. That's it, Carl Gables. I haven't found it necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981, and it's good to be here with you guys. It's always a privilege to be. It's always good for me to be at an A group. It's a privilege to speak at a group. And we're like somewhere around, well, I did seven last time. Somebody said I did it twice. So, you know, I lose track. So we're like eight or nine. We're still going to do a couple. We're going to mish them together and everything like that. And I'm going to actually, we're going to have, since we're like halfway, we're going to have a test now. We're going to have a quick test. I'm going to read three things to you, and then it's gonna be like a true-false, yes or no sort of test. Is there an echo or something?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes.
No. What is that? What do I got to do? I got to back up from this thing? Okay, so this is like a little test, okay? And I'm going to read three things, three excerpts from the book, and I'm going to ask you a question. We're going to see how you guys do. See you guys. And we've actually covered some of this material before. So I'm not giving you any, and this could be an open book test. If you have a book in front of you, you can follow along. The first one is from page 25. Okay? We have found much of, this is from There is a Solution. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, which we had not even dreamed. You guys get that?
Yes.
I don't have to read it again. I will if I have to, but the great fact is this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do for ourselves. You get that? You've heard that before, right? Okay, here's the second reading from the middle of the book. Okay? From the middle part of the book. The second reading. Hold on. Find it. This is page 63. When we sincerely took such a position, I'll give you a little hint that this comes right after the third step. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of His presence, we began to lose our fear of today, of tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. You hear that? You get that? I have to read it again, okay? This is the last one, okay? This is after the end of the book in one of the stories, okay? This is, he sold himself short. These last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. where I once had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends. I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I am rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, and self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. You hear that? You heard that one? Okay, everybody got that one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, here's the test. You ready? Which part of that is the part where they talk about hanging in there? Where is that in there? Did I miss that part about the hanging in there?
No.
Okay. Yeah, it's not in there. Now, you know, you're not going to escape this thing without going through some sort of suffering. You know, we went through the seventh step. You're not going to go past this thing without learning how, because as a result of suffering and going through trials and persevering through trials, it separates the wheat from the chaff. And it basically grows your faith and matures you so you become an adult. That's how we become adults. We go through suffering. So you're not going to, you know, we're all going to have our hanging in there moments. We're all going to have our days where we're just sort of making it step by step, and I understand that. But, you know, there's some people that make a lifetime experience of this deal. Their whole life is about trudging through life, hanging in there, one day at a time, and what they think AA is about, and maybe AA is about this to them, and maybe there's a huge group of people that AA will always be about this to them, and maybe that's just the way it's going to be, and maybe that's it. Where it's just about not drinking one day at a time and hanging in there. You know, I spoke previously in this group and other groups about the two books. The one book which is all about not drinking. That's the only thing they see. That's the only thing they read. That's the only thing this is about. They're standing in front of the not drinking club. There's thousands of them. And I'll tell you something. If you vary from that line, not drinking, and just sort of in any way go over to the other side of that street, you know, rocking in the fourth dimension of existence, experience a bunch of heaven, the God stuff, all the stuff that I just read, they'll go crazy. They'll go bonkers. We don't want to hear that stuff, but the plug and the jug, you know, and that's their deal. And that's what they see, and that's what they read, and that's what they commit themselves to. And you know something? That's what their life is about. And guess what? AA applauds that. We applaud living a life of not drinking. And it's probably a real good thing that we focus on that deal. We celebrate not drinking. We give medallions for not drinking. You know, at the end of, you know, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 60 days, whatever, you get an award. You get to come up here because you didn't drink. You know, it doesn't matter. You murdered 15 rabbis and a sheep. You know, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? As long as you didn't drink, you know. But somehow, some of us understand through the sponsors we pick and the people we look to, you know, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to England, we know that there's something. It's like that doc. It's like Bill Dotson said when he was talking about Bill Wilson. He says, "I knew there was something more. I knew there was something I hadn't got. That there's something beyond the not drinking that makes life even more than bearable. It's just unbelievable." And it's captured in some of those phrases I read. And, you know, I read those, I picked out three things, you know, sort of like at random. They're three of my favorite things. But you know, whether you want to go to the promises or other areas of the book, you know that the things like I read are things that were experienced by older members of Alcoholics Anonymous, by the founders, and they're all over the book. And there are many people that once they get past the not drinking, which is really not even the disease, it's just the symptom of the disease. Once they get rid of that symptom, you know and I know there are many people in Alcoholics Anonymous that understand that there's a gold mine of stuff down there if they could only get to it. And there are people that read this book and they know what it really is. It's about a relationship with God. It's about God doing for you what you can't do for yourself, and allowing you to live an abundant life, an incredible life, a life better than you could ever even imagine living. And they know it's there, and they're just trying to figure out how I can get to that deal. You know, and you know, the people that understand that and read this book and see that in this and experience the promises that come from that deal on an everyday basis, all they want to do is talk about that stuff. That's all they want to do is talk about that stuff. That's the only thing they want to share. That's what they want to talk about. And the ones that, you know, just experienced the not drinking deal, all they want to talk about is the not drinking, and we all have to meet in the same room at the same time. You know, and the guys that want to talk about just not drinking, they don't want to hear about the God stuff. And the guys that want to talk about God, they don't understand. They don't want to talk about anything else. They don't even understand why these other guys don't want to hear this stuff, because that's the real meat and potatoes. I happen to be one of those guys that want to talk about the rocket in the fourth dimension deal. That's what I want to talk about. So that's my deal. Now, it doesn't mean the other guys are wrong or bad or whatever it is. It's probably good we got a mixture of that deal, because there's some people that are ready, you know, because what does it say? When the pupil's ready, the teacher appears. And there are going to be people that are just not ready to hear some of this stuff, and, you know, they just want to hear about the drinking. There are going to be people that are just dying to hear. What they really need to hear is the meat and potatoes, something of a message of great weight and depth. Because, you know, some, they are sober, but they're hanging in there, and they're dying. And they're dying. And they're experiencing life at full force, and they want to know, there's got to be a way out of this thing. There's got to be, how do I get to that deal? And so that's the sort of thing I want to talk about, you know. So when I go about talking about the steps most of the time, and I think about the steps, you know, after the amount of time I've, and I also happen to know, based upon what I've sponsored a lot of people, you know, after 31 years, sponsor a lot of people, and not all of them make it, you know. It has nothing to do with me or anything like that. You know, a lot of people drink or drug or, you know, get into trouble and things like that. And what you realize is one of the things they say in the book is when they talk about the guy where he says every once in a while, the guy who's not drinking says, feel better, look better, having a better time. I don't miss it at all. And we say, we laugh at such Sally. We know he'll try the old game again because he's not happy with his sobriety. You know, soon he'll know the jumping off place. He'll know loneliness, few people do. We know that somehow, some way, happy and contented sobriety has to do with longevity. That we all have to know how to experience. Everybody in here is going to have to learn how to stay sober bored. I'm sorry. Everybody in here is going to have to take that course. Staying sober bored. You know, you're going to have to take that course. I know you don't like the course because it's boring. You know what I mean? But you're going to have to learn how to stay sober bored. Even though as an alcoholic you want to be excited and rocketed and in romance and, you know, basically your own star on the Lifetime channel all the time. And let me tell you something. Everybody in here is going to have to learn how to stay sober without another romantic person in their life for a long time. I'm sorry. That's just the course you got to take. You're going to have to learn how to do that. You know what I mean? Now, I understand that alcoholics who don't want to hear about God worship romance. That's why they say in the seventh chapter, we covered that. We never had enough romance, money, property, prestige, or romance. I understand. We believe, we absolutely know that if I only had a man in my life, a man would fix me. I understand that. Okay, I get that. I understand. I've been here long enough to know that. Personally, I am a man. I know men. Y'all are barking up the wrong tree. You know what I mean? And I happen to like men, okay? It's a sorry, sad, pitiful existence when women need men to be okay. On the other hand, I've been around long enough to know that there are men in here that will balk at worshiping God, that worship women. They are the central fact of their lives. They will do anything. They will extend themselves. They will buy things with money they don't have. They will do whatever they got to do to get a woman to look at them, because the only way they even feel they have any self-esteem or any self-worth is if they have something pretty on their arm. And I understand that too. And that's a pathetic deal also. And all sorts of idols and stuff in between, because that's what Bill Wilson says. The real problem of the alcoholic is unhealthy dependencies. And most of these dependencies, since our alcoholic life seems the only normal one, is stuff we don't even look at as dependencies. It's just the stuff we want in our lives that makes life for us worthwhile. I'll tell you what, it's the stuff, you know how it says we're alcoholics and we cannot manage our own lives? I'll tell you what this stuff is. This is the stuff you think about after you leave the AA meeting. You want to know what the problem is? You know what says you can't manage your own life? This is when you leave the AA meeting and you're feeling good for 5 minutes. After 5 minutes pass and you get in your car and you're on the cell phone, you go home with the TV. This is the stuff you concentrate on and focus on for the 24 hours until the next AA meeting where you say, I need another meeting. Figuring out how to manage your life so you can get all this stuff in your life and do all that stuff, and then you get to an AA meeting where it says, you can't manage your own life. Don't look at this stuff. And you get a little more AA, and then you go out there and try to do it again. And it's almost like I said, being right-handed. It's a natural way of thinking. You almost can't get away. You don't think about that as alcoholism. And that's more alcoholic than the drinking. Because the drinking is a symptom of the thinking about that stuff. And you want to know something? The drinking is easy to get rid of. You know what's difficult to get rid of? What's difficult to get rid of is that thinking about that stuff, which you think is more important than anything. If you don't think that's true, you need to go to more discussion meetings. I don't go to a lot of discussion meetings because I think I might start discussing things, you know what I mean? And I don't want to discuss what they're discussing, you know? But in any event, and that's the deal. And that's what you worry about. You don't sit around in your car sucking your thumb and worrying about God or worrying about your relationship with God or, you know, what can you do to perform His work well? Or you got a book that says, it says He'll give you everything you need if you stay close to Him and perform your work well. You don't spend the next 24 hours saying, what can I do to stay closer to God and know His will and perform His work well? You spend time thinking about how can I get more money and how can I get a new car and why are they looking at me that way and thinking about people and places and things and all the stuff that they say we shouldn't do in this thing. And if somebody says stop doing it, you get mad at that. Almost like what you used to get mad when somebody said, why do you drink so much? You get just as mad when people say don't think that way. Stop thinking that way. It's your thinking that's killing you. You know what I mean? And that's the real disease. That's the part where it says alcohol is a symptom of our disease. Our real disease centers in our mind and our thinking, not our body. And the first step in getting out of jail is knowing you're in jail in the first place. And we don't even know that's the problem because that's just the way we are. That's our personality. We don't even know that's crazy thinking. How could it be? It's just the way we think. It's the way I've thought all my life. I feel comfortable thinking that way. I run in here, I get it out. I get a sponsor who's a serious sponsor. He tells me, don't think that way. He tells me, be quiet. I don't want you to talk about this stuff. Do this, do that. And you say, what is he, crazy? This stuff is really important stuff. And it's the stuff that's actually going to kill you. And so when I start thinking about these steps, you know, what I start thinking about is, what is the principle behind them? What do they mean to me? How have they changed me? And they've changed me in so many ways, and sometimes you don't even realize what the change is and how they fit into each other until you're maybe 10 years past them or 20 years past. You just don't even see it because we're just so blind to so much stuff that's going on. We're so blind to our motivations. We're so blind to this deal. And so I look at one of the things I understand is that men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. And one of the things my books – now listen – one of the great things about this book is I don't even have to rely on my own thought process. I don't have to, all I have to do is read the book and believe the book. If I read this book, you know, one of the things they say is this is our basic text. We basically, this is what we agree on. We may not agree on a lot of stuff, we agree on this book. And the book says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They are restless. Now what is the effect? The effect is to give us ease and comfort, which must mean that we don't have ease or comfort or peace of mind when we're sober. And it basically says that. It says we're restless, irritable, and discontented, unless we can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. So if I have an alcohol, and alcoholics are liars. They lie to you. They lie to themselves. You know, they just are. You know, I don't know how you get a person not to stop lying. I have guys that stand in front of me who are sober. Marriages of Alcoholics are not. It's just the way we think. We have delusional thinking. I have guys, and I've said this before, that'll stand in front of me for an hour. They don't even have to be alcoholic. I mean, people come to my office. And for an hour, they confess to how worried and scared and anxious they are about everything. They're going to lose their job. They're going to lose their wife. They don't know what to do. They're worried. They can't sleep at night. They can't do anything. And after them talking, I say, so you're scared. And they'll say, I didn't say that. I said, I didn't say that. It's my wife. It's the business. It's this. I said, and they don't want to hear. They didn't. I didn't admit to being. They'll confess to being petrified You know, like, what did Winston Churchill, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself?
Yeah.
Well, what happens when you're scared and you don't even know you're scared and you won't even admit to being scared? They'll tell you to your face, they're scared out of their mind, and you'll say, so you're scared? So I didn't say that. What do you do with that? How do you handle that? When a person can't even think right, can't even make good decisions, is going to get angry at anything, even the people that are helping him, because he's so petrified, and when you point out you're petrified, he says, I never said that, and he gets mad at you. And you don't have, let me tell you something, I don't have to be drunk to be like that. I don't have to be, do you have to be drunk to be like that? Hey, sometimes you're like that more when you're sober. You know, you're really, you know, that's the nature of this disease, that kind of deal. You know what I mean? So one of the things that I have to realize is that I have to somehow get involved in a way of life so I have a power in me, so that I am transformed, so life doesn't affect me. Because you know what this book also says? This isn't for me. This is what the book says, and this drives my life. It says, the wrongdoings of others, fancied and real, you know, have the power to kill me. They dominate me. Fancy, by the way, means imaginary shit. It means, forget about reality. You know, we don't see the world the way it is. We see the world the way we are. Forget about reality. We see the world based upon how we feel. The bottom line is we look at this world and people may not even do anything wrong. If we think they may be doing something wrong, or we don't think life is fair, it screws up. And it says this. It says, here's what it says. It says selfishness. When you first come in here, the thing you grapple with is what? Not drinking. How long do you grapple with the not drinking stuff? A week?
A couple of weeks?
How long do you last in here, really, if you can't get the I have a drinking problem thing down? I mean, really, here's my thoughts. My thinking is, and I know this is a generalization, my thinking is that you ought to sort of somehow figure out that drinking is a problem actually before you get here. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to 100% buy into it, but you ought to suspect it. am I crazy or what? I mean, you ought to at least start off with a suspicion that that may be a possibility. Now, quite frankly, I'm not quite sure how anybody gets to Alcoholics Anonymous and walks through the door unless they suspect they have a drinking problem. But I suppose it's possible, you know what I mean? But somewhere along the line here, you got to somehow admit, I'm powerless over alcohol, my life is unmanageable, I need to stop drinking, you need to get that under control. So what do you think? Like a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever it is, till the obsession goes, a month? And then you got like the rest of your life. I mean, you're going to nail that down. You're going to nail that sucker. If you're not going to nail that down, then don't even worry about it. You don't even have to worry about the rest of the steps. Then you're going to nail that sucker down, the drinking. You're going to nail the symptom down. And then we get to work on what? The craziness. We get to work on the disease, the real deal. Because once you remove the symptoms, then you get to work on what's really going on. So then, I don't know, how many weeks do you think we spend? You guys are all here. I mean, I have a certain idea. How many weeks do we spend before we realize that we're crazy? Was there a time in here that you thought you had a drinking problem, but once you got rid of the drinking problem, you'd be okay? And you got rid of the drinking problem, you were feeling pretty good because you weren't drinking, you're picking up the chips. Did there come a time in anybody's life in here like me where somewhere along the way you realized you were crazy? What would you say? What does that take about? 2 or 3 months, 4 months, you know, it takes you really need to be sober. You really need to be free of alcohol, right? To realize you're crazy. If you're drinking, you don't realize you're crazy because you just think you got a drinking problem. You know what I mean? So you don't even understand what they're talking about. You really need to be sober in order to be crazy. You know what I mean? Because otherwise it doesn't work. But would I be correct in saying that if you're sober long enough, unless you're stupid, you'll realize you're crazy. Now, I know we get sponsors in here. Now, I know we get sponsors in here, and we got other people from the podium that tell us we're crazy. They'll say, you're crazy. You know what I mean? I know you'll hear people get up, and this is how we learn we're people. You'll get people stand up, and they'll tell their story, and you'll say, man, that guy is crazy. And then you'll say, man, that's the way I think. You know what I mean? And you'll sort of get your crazy. But somewhere along the line, do you think that most alcoholics sort of come to the realization that this is a very serious disease and they're crazy?
Yeah.
Right? Okay, good. So, I mean, if you don't get that down, you're not getting anywhere. Okay, so once you get down that you're crazy, one of the things that happens, which I think has a lot to do with 8 and 9, one of the things that happens is you start realizing, you start thinking about your thinking. You start thinking about your thinking. And one of the things that you'll see when you start getting to the 4-step, and even before the 4-step and around there, is that you got a lot of shit on your mind. You think a lot about a lot of stuff all the time. And it really, and it's, you ready for this? And you'll actually consider the possibility, you might even say this, that the crap you think of is not good crap, it's bad stuff, and it's bad stuff about you and other people. You ever have that experience?
Yes.
Sometimes people will say this, I got the committee going. Different people have different ways of expressing it, but somewhere along the way you realize it's your brain that's ganging up on you and killing you, and get this, you can't stop. You're powerless over your brain. You can't stop. You know, am I the only guy who's experienced this?
No.
Now, the problem is you can't stop. You know, I said to a guy one day, I said, I need help. I can't stop drinking. Anybody ever say, I need help. I can't stop drinking? Well, guess what? You need help. You can't stop thinking. You can't even envision a life without thinking the way you think. And every once in a while in Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll run into somebody who you'll sort of listen to them, you'll watch, you'll say, I don't think he thinks the way I think. Now, the truth of the matter is, most people do have that committee going, they're going crazy. But every once in a while, you run into somebody that sort of evidences the stuff that I just read from that book. See, that's what this thing is all about. It's about freedom from that way of thinking, freedom from in bondage to other people. And so you're reading this book, and all of a sudden you start reading stuff in this book like this. And I'm gonna. This is right out of the book. It says, because this whole book and everything, one of the things that this thing is about, besides pushing you towards a relationship with God, because God is really the answer to this whole thing, because you can't do it, because if you do it, you do it, okay? One of the things that happens is it gets you out of your denial that you're either okay or you're not crazy or you can somehow figure it out or handle it yourself. I mean, somewhere along the way, you have to really give up the ghost on this. You're going to have to, I know you thought it's a big sacrifice not drinking. And I know you think it's like a big sacrifice not hating. And I know you think it's a big sacrifice not hanging around with your friends. But every once in a while, as time goes by, you got to understand that you're going to have to sacrifice the whole tamale. You're going to have to throw the whole thing in. Everything. All your knowledge, everything, your brain, all your logic, you're going to have to throw the whole thing in if you want this deal. And sort of like demolish the whole thing and start from the beginning. And relearn this deal. Because otherwise you're just going to be hanging in there. You'll have 14 years, you'll be hanging in there. You got to decide whether you want to be right or you want to be happy. You know what I mean? If you want to be right, you're going to be hanging in there a lot. You're going to be pissed off at people. And so that being said, you know, you'll read things in the book like this. It'll give you little hints as to where you're going. It'll say selfishness, self-centeredness. That we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, you know, self-seeking, we step on the toes of others and they retaliate. Seemingly without provocation, we invariably find that the alcoholic himself will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. So what it basically says is because of our thinking sober, we are so messed up, we are so wrong, we see things so crazy because of our emotions, whatever it is, because of alcoholism, that we are constantly, obsessively, compulsively hurting people. And here's the great thing. We don't even realize we're hurting them. Now, if we do hurt them, we think it's their fault. And if it's called to our attention, you know, that we did this and we did that, we say, but we usually don't think so. We don't. So we live a life out there being irresponsible, hurting people, living a crummy life, and thinking that we're like God's gift to humanity. And we're the victim. I mean, that goes with alcoholism. I said to my sponsor once, now, I know there are people out there saying, I don't think that's right. Well, of course you don't think it's right. You're crazy. You know what I mean? That's okay. I don't mind that. I don't mind that you disagree with me. There's only an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. You don't have to agree with me. You know, we'll meet in 20 years from now. You can tell me whether you're hanging in there, whether you're rocking in the fourth dimension existence, or whether you're even sober. you know, the bomb, you know, I thought I was a victim too. I was a self-pityaholic too. I felt sorry for myself too. I saw the world like I was a victim. It was other people's event. I was not to blame. It was other people's faults. You know, I understand that deal. You know, I understand. I was judgmental too. But but the bottom line is, it's somewhere, somehow, you get to the point where you actually start understanding what these words, you know, these words are almost poetic. You know, it's funny, at an A meeting, I read these words, I say, man, it's like great poetry. It feels so good to read them. I almost think I understand them. But, you know, if you really look, the longer you go along, the more you go back to the same thing you're reading all along, and all of a sudden they start making more and more sense at a deeper and deeper level, that they're really explaining to you how seriously ill you are, how serious this disease is. And you want to know something? It has absolutely nothing to do with drinking. Has nothing. That's the scary thing. It has nothing to do with drinking. And I'm gonna let, and we're gonna open up these doors. Listen to me. This is the sad part. We're gonna open up these doors in about 20 minutes and let you guys out into the world. We're gonna let you back into the world. There's gonna be traffic out there. There's gonna be bad breaks and misunderstandings. We're letting you out. You know what I'm talking about? You're going out. You know, it's a scary deal. So one of the things that I have to understand is that as a result of just living in the world and thinking and being an alcoholic and suffering from this disease, I'm walking around hating people, getting mad, feeling sorry for myself. Now, I always keep on wondering, how can I say this without it? I don't say I'm worried about how it says, but I want to say it the right way. I don't know how many years, whether it was 10 or 15 or 20 years. I know I lived a major portion of my life. I'm 62 years old now. I would say at least the first... Now, this doesn't mean this has anything to do with you. I jokingly say this to people. Guys I sponsor will come up to me, they'll have 5 or 6 years, and they'll be all screwed up because of their wife, their boss or something. I'll say, oh, yeah, I know that. You'll be okay in 20 years. Don't worry about it, you know? And they sort of the truth is, and I'm just talking about myself, and I'm just telling you the truth. I'm going to tell you the truth for whatever, and I don't really think it's a bad thing. I probably, and I'm not saying you get completely perfect on this or it goes away, but I was probably run ragged by the world in hand-to-hand combat by the planet Earth. You know, my emotional state was the sum total of every banana I ran into on any given day, from waking up in the morning to going to sleep at night. I mean, the world affected me. You know what it says? It says, selfishness, self-centered, we must get rid of this or it kills us. It says the world and its people dominate us, okay? I would say that working a program of recovery with a sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous, the world and its people dominated me for a good 20 years. For a good 20 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just telling you the truth. I'm sure you guys are much sharper than me. I think you guys are going to get it, you know, in about 3 weeks or something like that. I'm sure. You know what I mean? But actually, that should be comforting to you. Because one of the things that used to bother me is always thinking that I should be better than I am. You know what I mean? That somehow, you know, one of the things I used to beat myself up with, is what a creepy piece of crap I was, is I have 5 years I shouldn't feel this way. I have 10 years I shouldn't feel this way. I have 15 years I shouldn't feel this way. So actually it was kind of comforting to have a guy with 20 years or 25 years saying, let me tell you something, I didn't start feeling like I was rocking the fourth dimension until I had 25 years. Because I started thinking, well, maybe I'm not so bad. Maybe you're going to have to... Listen, I know one of the things we have as alcoholics is the idea is that we decide when we should get better. You know, I've been lonely enough. You know, I've been feeling crappy long enough. You know, I've been struggling with money long enough. It's been 2 years. I says, I'll give this AA thing a try. I'll give it a year. Well, how about 20 years? I mean, when, you know, somehow deciding that we are really in charge of our recovery. That God's not in charge. That we're in charge of how much suffering we're going to have. We're in charge about how much crap we have to go through to become adults. We're in charge as to when we're going to be like this guy and that guy. And I went through that stuff all the time. I'd run around with these guys with 30 years, I say, and I'd have 30 days. I'd say, when am I going to feel like him? I wanted 30 years and 30 days. You have to, let me tell you something. You know how you get 30 years? You stay sober for 30 years. That's how you get 30 years. And one of the things that I had a problem with, that what you have a problem with as far as these deals are concerned, and that you have to learn these steps over and over again, because the steps are really exercises and templates for living a spiritual life, is the idea of guilt and resentment. Guilt, remorse, and resentment. Feeling guilty. You know, the concept, you know, this crap about I can't go there because he's there. I can't go to that group because that person's there. You know, I think that person is talking about me. I wonder what they're saying about me. That worry about whether people are talking about you behind your back or what people are saying about you. 90% of it ain't even happening. You know what I mean? Doesn't stop you from worrying about it. That stuff where you live how much time in your life do you live worrying about other people in your mind, what they're saying about you, what they're thinking about? Can you think of anything more of a waste of time than worrying about what I think about you?
Yeah.
I mean, is it possible to think of anything that's more of a waste of time? Well, let me ask some. If it's a waste of time worrying about what other people think about you, why do you spend so much time doing it? Why can't you stop doing it? If you're worried all the time about what your mother, your father, your sister, your aunts, your boys, everybody else in the world thinks about, if it's a waste of time, if you can't change it, you can't do anything about it, they're living rent-free in your heads, then why do you do it? Do you think it affects how you feel about yourself? Do you think it affects whether you're rocking in the fourth dimension of existence? Do you think it affects you think it affects how you react to people, the judgments? Of course, it all affects that stuff. Then why do you do it? It's just as much part of the disease. It's just as much part of drinking. It's like drinking crap. It's, you know, drinking, worrying about you. It's drinking worry. It's drinking anxiety. And so one of the things I have to do is I've got to learn how to get rid of that stuff. And if I knew how to do it naturally, you know how an alcoholic stops worrying about what people think about him? He thinks harder about him. That's how he says, oh, I got to stop worrying about this. So you just worry about it more. Trying to figure out whatever it is. Now listen, one of the books that the founder said, now I know you guys like to think this whole thing sprung out of the brain of Bill Wilson. It didn't, okay, he didn't invent it. One of the books in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers that the founder said were absolutely essential, it was the book of James, it was 1 Corinthians 13, and then was the Sermon on the Mount. In the Sermon on the Mount, which is a sermon that was given by Jesus in 5, 6, and 7, it's basically how to live a spiritual life and give closer to God, okay? And one of the major things in there is something having to do with forgiveness and guilt, which was picked up in our book, whether you like it or not. It's there in 7, it's in 8 and 9. It's part of 8 and 9. And this is the spiritual principle. It's a spiritual principle. I'm not asking you to buy into it. I'm not asking you to get baptized or anything. It's just a spiritual principle, and it's written in 8 and 9. The spiritual principle of this is God is always ready to forgive you. Is always ready to forgive you if you confess to yourself and others what you've done and what your deal is, and confess to yourself what your deal is, and then you go out and repair the damage and try to repair the damage. It's right there in the Sermon on the Mount. It says, if you're going to come to me, don't come to me first. I'll have a relationship with you. I'll give you everything you need. But if you screwed up your brother, go make amends to your brother and tell him what you did was screwed up and then come back to me, okay? Don't be coming to me after you hurt everybody and say, let's be pals, if you're not prepared to straighten out. You can call it sort of like a converse of the golden rule. Do unto others what you have others do unto you, or whatever you want to do. It's a way of life. It's a spiritual axiom. And that's written into this deal. And that's a tough thing for alcoholics to follow. Now, we, of course, have a manner and a method. That's the beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous. We actually have a manner and method on how to take people through this thing. You know, they don't know where it came from. It's like we have a chart, you know, the 8 step comes right out of it. We have a chart, a 4-step chart, if you do it, where you see exactly clearly what you've been doing. Because I'll tell you something else I learned about the 8 step and the 9 step. Unless you know what you actually did, because I'll tell you one thing about this alcoholic, if you hurt me in any way, I'll remember that hurt forever. If I hurt you in any way, I don't even realize I hurt you. And you want to something? If I actually realize I hurt you, as soon as I say I'm sorry, you better get over it. You better get over it. I mean, what the hell is this? I told you I was sorry. You know, if the eighth step had to do, and the ninth step had to do with saying I'm sorry, I've been doing that shit all my life. You understand? Because I am, as an alcoholic, any alcoholic should get a PhD in, I'm sorry. You know I raped your dog and killed your wife and burned down. Listen, I said I was sorry. I said I was sorry, you know. What do you want me to do? You know, because my way, sorry doesn't cut it. Because my way of, when I say I'm sorry, what I really mean is, I don't want you to make me feel bad. So if I say I'm sorry, what you're supposed to do is forgive me and not hold it against me. And I don't even know what I did to you, quite frankly. So unless, the fact of the matter is, one of the things I have to learn is exactly what I did, somehow develop empathy for other people, and understand what I actually did. What did I actually do? Because I'll tell you one thing, I'd said I'm sorry a lot, but I never said I was wrong. Why would I say I was wrong? I was never wrong. I never hurt anybody that didn't deserve to be hurt. I didn't do anything bad unless they deserved it, unless they caused it in the first place. You know, justifiable anger? That's the only anger I know, justifiable anger. All my anger was justified. You know what I mean? You'd be angry too. So the bottom line is, unless I really get a handle on what I did and why I did it and how it affected somebody, I don't even know how to clear it up. Because my way of clearing up shooting somebody five times is to say, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. You know what I mean? It's certainly my idea of I steal money from you. My idea of fixing that up is saying, I'm sorry, I'll pay you back. And then not paying you back because I don't have to pay you back. All I have to say is, I'll pay you back. That's the same. In other words, as long as I intend to pay you back, that's it. Slate clean. You know what I mean? It's like saying your name again. My name's so-and-so, and you start all over again, you know? And unless and until I'm not going to get that relationship with my creator that they had, unless I learn and get the forgiveness that comes from that, so I won't have the guilt and the feeling sorry for myself and worry about, you don't want to have those people lying around in your mind. You want to have those people on your mind? You know, I mean, you know, when, you know, if, this book gives you a way so that you can wipe those people off your mind. You can just get rid of them. You don't have to think about them anymore. You don't have to think of your mother, your father, your sister, or your aunt, this guy and that guy and all that stuff. Just get rid of them. And actually, it gives you a way so that as things go along, and that's, of course, the 10th step down along, that you can get rid of them as they pop up so that your mind can be clear. I once picked up a book it was a thin little book. They probably still publish it. And it was from the White Eagle Society. Remember, they published it. A little blue book. And on the title was The Quiet Mind. The Quiet Mind. I had to have that book. You know, and I read it. I can't even remember what it said, but I had. And the reason I had to have the book is because I wanted so much to have the quiet mind. How do you have a quiet mind? My mind was screaming all the time, bad thoughts about myself and other people. And I wanted that quiet mind. It doesn't matter how much money you have. It doesn't matter how good looking you are. It doesn't matter whether you lose weight. It doesn't matter anything. The mind is I used to look at those NAACP companies. The mind is a terrible thing to waste. You know what I mean? And so they don't got my mind. You know what I mean? I want to waste that sucker, you know? The quiet mind. This is the thing. This is the thing that quiets the mind. So you don't have those people, places, and things living rent-free in your head, worried all the time about what they're saying, worried about whether you can go here, whether you can go there, whether you can see this one, whether you can see that one, whether you should pick up the phone, whether you should answer that message, whether you should call, whether you should not call, all those crazy decisions and worries and anxieties that make up your life, which is why you say, I need a meeting, you know, all that stuff. This is how you get rid of it, through the eighth and ninth step, through learning this stuff. You know, and working it with your sponsor. And we have a method of doing it in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's a spiritual principle, and it has to do, the bottom line of it has to do with God. And the last thing, I'll close by saying this. It says, just like it said in all the, remember when we were doing the fifth and sixth step, I said, because I always like to bring in this, if you look at the first part of Into Action, after how it works, the first part of Into Action, it says, if I could find it, just to give you an idea how this this concept runs all the way through this. When they're talking about 6 and 7 and all that sort of stuff, it says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. In other words, this is all about a relationship with God, discovering the obstacles in our path, getting rid of those obstacles so we can be transformed and He can start doing for us what we can't do for ourselves, i.e. get rid of all that crap in our mind. Well, if you go to the A step, if I can find that, it's what do you think it says in the A step? Now we're on the A step. You think it varies the message? The message is the same all the way through. At the moment, it says at the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose, what do you think our real purpose is? To feel good about ourselves? Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. He's all over the book. It's all about having a relationship with Him, being of maximum service to Him. That fits in once again with staying close to Him and performing His works well. This book is perfectly consistent. It's all about Him. It's all about that guy doing His will. And at the very end, you know, it's the last line. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. So thank you very much. Next week we'll talk a little bit more about it.